Brahma, Om, Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Ti Namane, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschata De Satarane. The first point I would like to make is that everyone is entitled to a personal relationship with His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It's not a closed affair. And so, during this Prabhupada festival, those of us, and it should be all of us, who consider ourselves followers of Prabhupada, Prabhupada Anugas, should be thinking about our relationship with Him. Don't think it's non-existent, but rather, first of all, we have that relationship, even though He has disappeared in His personal form, in one sense, from this planet. So, that means that each of us can say and think, my Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada once explained this in relationship to Krishna. He was lecturing about the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, and in one prayer Prahlad says, my dear Lord. And he describes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one of the ladies, initiated disciple, asked Prabhupada, how can Prahlad say to Krishna that he's my Lord, if actually he's everyone's Lord? And Prabhupada explained that such a thing is possible for Krishna, although it's not possible for others. He said, for example, you can say to your husband, my dear husband, but other women, they cannot claim that of your husband. He's not their dear husband, only yours. But Krishna is such that everyone can say very personally, intimately, my Lord. And Krishna, He can reciprocate with everyone in that way. So we each can think and act like that with the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. There's an important similarity between the pure devotee and the Supreme Lord in that regard, and that is that He is in our heart. If we want Him to be. This is stated, for example, in the introduction to Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada defines Krishna. He says Krishna means Lord Krishna with all His expansions and associates, including His pure devotees. So where Krishna is present, and Krishna is present in our heart, so He's present there also, and the pure devotee is present. And even more directly, Prabhupada states in the concluding words to the Chaitanya Charitamrita that His spiritual master, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, is always with Him, always watching Him. And then He says He's in the heart as the Lord is. So, that being true, that we each have a relationship with our Prabhupada, it also means that, subjectively speaking, we are relating to different aspects of Prabhupada, or our Prabhupada seems to us different than someone else's from the subjective point of view. Prabhupada is one, but we each have our own relationship with Him, which subjectively means we each live with our own Prabhupada. Now, to make that clearer, There's a nice example again about Lord Krishna. When Lord Krishna appeared at the wrestling arena of Kamsa, he went, and he was seen by people in many different ways according to their subjective viewpoint. The wrestlers who were about to fight with Krishna saw him as a thunderbolt, whereas the cowherd girls, they saw him as beautiful young boy like Cupid, and their desires for him increased in that way. The cowherd people, men, saw him as a kinsman from their village of Vrindavan. Yogis in the assembly saw him as the super soul. Mother and father, Yasoda and Nanda, saw him as their darling little son. Unintelligent people saw him as an incapable personality. Kamsa saw him as death personified, and so on, although Krishna was one. So someone particularly thinks of Prabhupada as the general on the battlefield of Sankirtan and expansion of ISKCON. Someone may more think of him as the transcendental pure devotee scholar of the Bhaktivedanta purports. And some of us think of Swamiji in his very early years in America, very approachable and personable. All these things are true. And again, the important point about it is, for us individually, is that we try to improve our relationship with Prabhupada, make it less distant. So how to do that, especially at, or how to make some use of this festival in that way. We have such nice ability to meditate on Prabhupada in his residence here. The whole temple is his residence and his house is there. We can go before him in so many murtis and try to think how we can be better followers of Prabhupada. What we can do that will please him and we understand it's a desire of the ISKCON movement and its leaders that everyone should feel that Prabhupada is accessible and he's their guru. So that invitation is there, and we should take it up to think of how we can please him and exchange with him. Never mind that you're only coming to the Krishna consciousness movement now. And if we think we already have a relationship with him, that also regularly needs revival. Relationship shouldn't be a sentimental thing, or he's not merely an official figurehead, but he's our dearmost friend, and we have to give that some shape and substance. So as Dina Bandhu Prabhu asked me to start off remembrances of Prabhupada, I would like to remember my Prabhupada, and understanding, of course, that nobody knows everything about him. We could almost say no one knows very much about him. Vaishnavera kriye mudra vigena bujaya. One doesn't know the mind of the Vaishnava. He has a spiritual form. He's a spiritual person. That's why we all can relate to him even now. So when he was here, nobody had a monopoly of understanding in Prabhupada, neither do they now. But we like to hear everyone's realizations. So I want to tell some memories of the time when Prabhupada brought me to Krishna consciousness by different personal acts, capturing acts that he did to bring me to him in 1966. before I just go into them, I have to say how I feel hesitant to tell them, although it may not be necessary for you, but it helps me to tell them once I say this verse. I hesitate to tell them because I may get puffed up telling stories about Prabhupada. And there are other hesitancies which probably aren't worth mentioning. One, of course, is that people have heard these stories. Like when in conversation, if someone is about to tell a joke, a funny story, one standard line is, "Stop me if you've heard this," a man will say. But we prefer to say, "Please let me tell my stories again of Prabhupada." So, I'll start with one little thing which Prabhupada was kind to recognize about my giving him a mango. These are 1966, when Prabhupada was starting the ISKCON at the storefront on 26 Second Avenue. And of course he had lectures 3 nights a week, and then on other nights we would gather in his room. So he mentioned this his attraction to the mango. He said, "The mango is the king of fruits, but they are not available in America." And he told other things about the mango. For example, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's vow not to eat the mango from his very earliest age. And Prabhupada said, "You couldn't appreciate that vow because you don't know the mango, what a delicious fruit it is." But his whole life he never ate it. So, when Swamiji, as we called Prabhupada then, said those things, somehow I thought, well, why don't I get him a mango? At that time I was working at a job and I wasn't giving my money to the temple, I wasn't initiated. So it was kind of, you might say, a sentimental thing to only begin service there instead of more substantially, to give more substantially. But I liked the idea that I would do this. And it came from his inspiring me to want to please him. So mangoes weren't available much in that neighborhood, but there was one grocery store that in the back they kept mangoes, they were a dollar each. So I bought one once and I brought it to him. I remember after work getting it and giving it to him, and he was very pleased with it, he liked it. And he took it. And then, so then I started a regular habit, especially on those off nights. Whenever I would come, I would go buy the mango and give it. I didn't have to go through any secretaries or anybody. It was just me and the mango and Swamiji. So one night I went in with the mango, and about a dozen or so devotees were sitting there, young men. So I gave Swamiji the mango. He would sit at his desk. The desk was a small tin trunk, Indian trunk. He kept his typewriter on. He sat on a mat with a picture of Krishna overhead. There was a picture, a calendar of Krishna standing on the earth. You could see the shape of the earth planet, and a nice picture of Krishna with his flute right over Swamiji's head. So I gave him the mango and went to sit down. And he said, "Very good boy." And when he said that, everyone burst out laughing, because he said it the way you would say that to like a 5-year-old boy who's proud of having done something. Prabhupada would call, I was a 26-year-old man, I thought, with a job and so on, educated. But Prabhupada called practically everybody a boy. Called George Harrison a nice boy. So he said, "Very, very good boy," and everyone laughed, and I felt like a fool. And then, however, then Prabhupada changed their mood, and he said, "No, this is love. This is Krishna consciousness." So that was an important gesture for me to understand that although it was not a perfect offering, that this was actually Krishna consciousness to make an offering of love that you did voluntarily. And so I wanted to do more. At that time I had savings of $600 in the bank, which I was going to use in my own way. But after I met Prabhupada, I started making donations, $20, $30. And after a couple of weeks I had $400 left. So I thought, why be so whimsical, so to speak, or trying to be like a big donor, always coming by, giving money. Give all your money at once and be done with it. So I drew out all the money and I went to Prabhupada, and in his room, I think he was alone that time. And I came beside him very closely and somewhat shyly, I said, Prabhupada, Swamiji, I want to give you a donation. This is my entire life savings. So he flashed a wonderful smile. He was very innocently, openly pleased to receive the money. And he wasn't getting much money. As he said himself, I used to collect not less than six, not more than $20 on the kirtan nights. So that was, $400 was enough for rent and so many things. So he was very pleased and smiled, and he said, oh, Don is giving us money also. Another boy was giving money. But the smile that he gave me, it was, I was completely happy and pleased. And so, basking in that pleasure of having given and having pleased him, I moved away from him and sat down a few feet. And when I turned and looked at him, he was a completely different person in his look. And it wasn't my imagination. But instead of that wonderful, grateful, happy smile, he was looking at me dead serious and sternly. I was shocked that he had changed so fast. And he was like, his look was penetrating right through me. And I understood this much anyway, that that I shouldn't have felt so pleased and satisfied with myself as I was. And it was as if he was saying, it's all right that you've given this money, but you still have to surrender to Krishna, and that you haven't done. And when Prabhupada would look through you, there was nothing left, there could be nothing left of your false ego. Another incident of a kind of exchange with Prabhupada that I remember is there was a bunch of us together again, and Prabhupada was talking, as he often did, that the perfection of life is to please Krishna. So I began to think about that and what it meant and how I could do it in a very mental way. I remember, I don't think Hari Sori is, Prabhu is here, or there he is. I seem to remember when Hari Sori was GBC for New York, being from Australia, it was quite a culture shock for him. And I remember him saying, these New Yorkers are so mental. So I was a typical mental New Yorker. And I was thinking, well, Swamiji says to please Krishna, but I could be many different people, so how should I please Krishna? My experience was that people, they just acted with each other for sense gratification to get what you wanted, and so you acted in a different way with different people. Practically, you had no true self, but you could act one way, you could act another way. And so I was confused at who among your many selves should you be to please Krishna? So I asked Prabhupada that question. I said, Swamiji, I feel I can be many different persons, but how do I know which person I should be to please Krishna? And he said, this boy Steve is very nice. He does typing for me, and sometimes he gives me donations. So you should be like him. So I was startled that Prabhupada didn't answer my psychological question, but he answered in his own perfect way, very simple and direct. And in a way that made me very much like captured by him, and he had really understood me. I was his servant, and that's how I should please Krishna, was to do nice, do plain, ordinary things for the spiritual master, Prabhupada. So one by one, by these different things, I became won over. And they all emphasized that I required this personal attention in the beginning, especially. And when it wasn't there, I tended to drift away quickly until he again showed me some personal attention. Another typical example was one morning, it was a Sunday morning, after he gave his morning lecture, it was in the summer, 66. So the meeting broke up, and we weren't like a temple that when the lecture was over, then we all went and did something else together, and then we did something else together. Everyone was still sort of doing their own thing. Wasn't even initiation, I don't think. So I went out the front door, and the door was open, and I sat on the curb of Second Avenue, and I was thinking, I wonder what I would do now. What would I do today? Would I go see some friends, or would I go back to my apartment and do some nonsense? What should I do? And I was just trying to think of what I wanted to do, because I had no commitment, aside from hearing the lecture, to Swamiji. And he saw me sitting out there on the curb, and he was still on the dais, as we called it, the Vyasa-san. And so then next thing I knew, one of the boys was there, and he said, the Swami wants to see you. So I was glad to hear that, and I went back in the store, and he said, do you have an engagement today at work? I said, no, it's Sunday, I don't have any work. He said, then we're having a feast, so I would like to invite you to the Sunday feast. At that time, the feasts were small, they were just in his apartment, and I thought that they were for just the select group, the insiders, that I didn't consider myself part of them. But then when he personally invited me, I went. And there, he gave us all so much attention, because he actually cooked the prasadam, and he served it, and he would walk up and down the rows with the devotees in his bare feet, and so many nice preparations, the sweet rice and other kinds of savories, and always asking us if we wanted more. That was his special Sunday feasts. So these were the kind of things. And there's one of them, it's a small one, but I'd like to read it rather than tell it. Dinabandhu Prabhu said in one morning announcement, I was going to tell unpublished pastimes, but I don't have any unpublished pastimes. Now this is just, I couldn't remember it because it's such a slight thing, but the mood is important. Srila Prabhupada attracted me by his personal dealings. I would also deliberately cultivate these dealings with him. Once at one of our evening meetings, a crazy man had entered the temple and had danced around in a mad, non-devotional manner. Prabhupada had tolerated him, and he had eventually left the storefront. A day later, when I was walking in the Lower East Side neighborhood to the welfare office, I saw this same man. He was now standing in the middle of the street with a broom, imitating a traffic policeman by dramatically conducting traffic. I went to Prabhupada's apartment and told him, Swamiji, you know that man who was dancing wildly in our kirtan? I just saw him on the street, and he was directing traffic. At first, Prabhupada questioned me what I meant by directing traffic. I said the man was crazy and was imitating a policeman. Oh, he is a madman? Prabhupada said, and he opened his eyes wide. I would purposely try to bring up odd topics like this because I delighted in hearing Prabhupada talk about seemingly ordinary things. I quickly learned to hold him in high reverence, but hearing him comment about ordinary affairs made me feel more love and friendship for him. Our developing relationship was a variety of absolute philosophy and personal affection with a firm basis of love and trust. Prabhupada once said, at that time, that unless we were acquainted with Krishna, how could we love him? The same seemed true of our relationship with Prabhupada. So these kind of things, they climaxed, and this is the last one I'll tell of this period. It climaxed for me at a period just when we had the first initiation in ISKCON. My first significant service to Prabhupada was to be a typist. I typed the Gita Upanishad introduction, and I started, Hayagriva would edit, and I would type Prabhupada's manuscript. So I took that very seriously. Sometimes, one time Prabhupada asked me to type something. He gave it to me at night, and he said he wanted it the next morning. It was an essay. So I had to stay up all night to type it. And then he took it, and he didn't use it immediately either. But I would like to sit and type. So I had that service. Then the first initiation came. And on the day of the initiation, I decided I would stay home and type, do my service, instead of going to the initiation, instead of getting initiated. Although it was open to everyone, Prabhupada didn't personally ask me to get initiated, so I had that old problem of wanting personal attention. That was one excuse, and also I wasn't ready to surrender to Krishna yet. And I thought, well, this service, this is a fit occupation also. I don't have to get initiated, I'll just do this typing. So I did a substantial amount, and the next day I went to see him. A few blocks away was where he lived. When I went there, I rang the bell, and he was alone, and he allowed me in. He seemed to be pleased to see me, but he said, oh, you weren't at the initiation yesterday. I just said no. I didn't offer any excuse or explanation. And he said, that's all right. And so we sat down, and then I proudly got out all the typing and gave it to him. And he looked at it, he seemed to approve of it, and he gave me a couple of grapes. And my first impression was that this is such a small thing, he's giving me just two grapes, and I worked so hard to do all this typing. But then he said, Krishna will bless you. And when he said that, I was very pleased, because I believed him that for doing the work, he said that Krishna would bless me, so I would actually get Krishna's blessings. So I was feeling real satisfied then. And while we were talking, then the phone rang, and he picked it up, and he was talking with someone about arranging for a marriage ceremony. And then he hung up, and he said, I would like to personally invite you to a wedding ceremony we're having tomorrow night. Two of my disciples, Mukunda and his girlfriend, are going to get married. So can you come? So there it was, the personal invitation. And I said, yes. Yes, Swamiji, I'll be able to come. Thank you very much. So, of course, he could see me inside out what I was up to. And so then he gave me more typing. He said, here, he said, you did very well. Now here's some more typing to do. So I took it, and I was starting to leave. But he said, this is not automatic. Don't simply take this work and do it mechanically. So that was a very personal remark, and I knew just what he meant. So I was thinking about that, and then I started to go out the door. He saw me to the door, and then he said, if you love me, then I'll love you. And that was it. Then he shut the door, and I went out. But when he said that, it was very, it was a big breakthrough for me. And I felt very happy, and I felt like I had passed through that neurotic mentality, because actually I had wanted him to love me, and that felt very nice, but he was saying that it's two-way. You have to give your love to me. And I realized that I had a lot of reasons why I didn't want to love him. I was afraid to surrender, different personal distastes, that I had to give up and actually give my love to him, not just wait for my guru to love me in so many ways and give me attention. There was such a remark that it freed me, and it was like a significant turning point for me. From that day on, I was eager to find out when is the next initiation, and I wanted to do more service, and didn't need so much personal attention, although I still was still all craving for that. So I've taken my time, and I hope that it's not just my Prabhupada, but that these very things, you can relate to them and help you in your relationship with Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Saraswati Deve, Puravani Pacharani, Nirvishesha Sanyavari Prasthakali Sitarani. On behalf of all the ISKCON devotees of Prabhupada, I would like to thank all the respected guests of Vrindavan for attending this function. Well, I was able to speak to my heart's content last night, memories of Srila Prabhupada. I would like to speak shortly this morning about this occasion, the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada. As Prabhupada spoke in the lecture this morning, there is no difference between the appearance and the disappearance of the liberated spiritual master. And he also said that therefore there is no lamentation. However, there are other attitudes also, which include a kind of transcendental lamentation. If we think of the occasion that we are celebrating today, as it occurred 12 years ago, it was the most unhappy catastrophe. But somehow, by the true transcendental vision, we have to understand it otherwise and see that it is not different than his appearance or disappearance. But nevertheless, at least for myself and probably for all devotees, when they think of today, there is a sorrow that Srila Prabhupada has left. On the disappearance of our Srila Prabhupada's own spiritual master, he expressed this. He wrote in his poem to that effect. On that day, O my master, I made a cry of grief. I was not able to tolerate the absence of you, my guru. And this expression is also made in a song by Narottam Das Thakur, the prayer for the departed Vaishnavas, where he says that I want to smash my head against the rock and enter the fire. And in the absence of Lord Chaitanya and his followers who have now departed, Narottam Das simply weeps. There's also a Vaishnava poem that now that my spiritual master has departed, as I look at Radhakund, it appears to be a huge monster about to devour me. And the Govardhan Hill looks like a python about to attack me. So this is the grief, which is also to be refined by us into the Vaishnava sentiment of separation, which is actually the highest understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy. At the same time that Prabhupada is absent from us, he is also present in so many ways through his vani. the both feelings are sometimes combined. There is one Krishna Leela where these two aspects are expressed. In Vrindavan, after Krishna had left for Mathura, all the devotees were very unhappy, and Mother Yasoda was in extreme grief. There is one expression that she saw the stick that Krishna always kept with him. It was still in her home. But to see the stick of Krishna without Krishna stunned her. And this is an example of ecstasy, of being stunned. And Mother Yasoda also expressed unhappiness that she could no longer smell her son's head or give him breast milk. And she condemned her opulence of so many cows which could not give Krishna milk anymore. And feeling this way, she criticized Nanda and said, Nanda, you're so hard-hearted. How can you sit here and in the absence of Krishna and not do something to bring about Krishna's presence? But Nanda Maharaj was in a different mood, and he was fully seeing that Krishna was present. So he replied to her charge of hard-heartedness and said, he chastised her, said, foolish woman, don't disturb the peace of my home. Don't you see that Krishna is standing right here? He's not absent in any way. And this expression, this illusion of Nanda was conveyed to Krishna, who heard of this mood. So both of these can be constructive in regard to Srila Prabhupada. If we feel his absence intensely, it's another way of being with him, anticipating being with him in the future. And by being with devotees, giving each other solace by remembering, the very fact of his departure has many constructive aspects to it, even in the mood of feeling his absence. For example, without his exact supervision, we're in great danger of being completely deviated from Prabhupada's mission. So we have to be even more careful to obey, as the devotees have been saying, to preach and to develop our own Krishna consciousness and to work cooperatively because we know what a loss we have without his direct supervision, his direct hand. In other words, the loss should make us even more serious because our position is precarious. Also, the feeling of absence or incompleteness, as it was expressed by Trivikram Maharaj, can also be applied to oneself, that one feels sadness that one is not a good devotee and wishes to make up to Srila Prabhupada for this somehow or other, or at least to stay at his lotus feet to follow his instruction. And I'm sure you can think of many other ways to convert this unhappiness that he has left our midst. As far as the positive sense, which means that Prabhupada is not absent, we have plenty of example of that. And our philosophy is that the vani is more important than the personal presence or the bhapu. The presence of the spiritual master is by sound vibration, by instruction. So Prabhupada is present in his books and in all the instructions he gave. And these are being reproduced in so many nice ways by hearing lectures and books and by carrying out his instructions. He left us enough instructions for many, many lifetimes. So there's no absence of his guidance. Rather, taking both these moves, we can go forward as Prabhupada wanted. Pandera, Charna Sevi, Bhakta Sannivas, Janame Janame Hai, Eyavilas. Our desire should be to always live in the society of devotees, life after life, and to serve their lotus feet. This we do, and to please Prabhupada, we should try to make ourselves a genuine devotee, to really develop attachment to the holy name, and attachment to hearing about Krishna. Prabhupada will be very pleased if we can do this. And also to carry on preaching activity according to our capacity and combined forces. So, therefore, when we remember 12 years ago, Prabhupada left his body and he taught us that we also will have to do that, each one of us, and we should do it following his ideal example, if possible, in Vrindavan, surrounded by the holy name, and preaching until the last breath. So, furthermore, he left and went to Goloka, Vrindavan, so we should aspire to leave and join him again, and in the meantime, use our full life energy to carry out his mission. Thank you very much.
Thank you.